Hello, Lincoln, and welcome to another Earth to Lincoln show on KZUM and KZUM HD 89.3 FM on your dial. My name's Chris the Bird Lady, and I am pleased to have in the studio tonight with me Caroline Jazerski, and she is from UNL. She works for the co-op unit, and she's going to explain a little bit more about that. Anyway, Caroline is the Wind Energy and Wildlife Project Coordinator at the university, and I am just so happy you could come in today. Welcome, Caroline.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, so you have a big title. So could you tell listeners maybe a little bit about what you do?
Sure. You know, I have a big title, and I also have kind of a complex goal for my position. My position goal is to facilitate wind power site selection and operation in a manner that allows for increasing energy development while balancing the ecological and sociological needs of Nebraska. Now, what does that all mean? Well, basically, wind energy development is a type of renewable energy. And there's a big push right now in the United States and across the world to develop more renewable energy sources. And in fact, the President of the United States, President Obama, wants 80% of the nation's electricity to come from clean energy sources by 2035. And clean energy sources could be anything that is cleaner than fossil fuel consumption.
Okay.
And so not only is wind energy considered a renewable energy, it's oftentimes considered a clean energy or green energy source. One of the things that's a concern is that although it's considered a green energy source, there may be some impacts to wildlife when
sure.
it's being generated.
Sure. You know, a lot of us have gone down Interstate 80 and seen the turbines themselves. The, you know, just north of Lincoln here, we have two big areas that have wind turbines. And if you drive any length of the interstate, you're bound to see one of those fan blades on the back of a truck.
Well, and that's a good point. When I first got this position, I thought, these are big, but how big are they really? And when you see one of those blades being driven down the highway on a semi, you kind of get a feel for it. But those blades can be up to 184 feet long. So quite large. And the towers out there, when you see them on the landscape, it's kind of hard to understand how tall they are. But they can be up to 492 feet tall.
Wow.
And they're just going higher into the sky. So they're quite large. And when you see them turning, they seem like they're turning pretty slowly. But in fact, the tip of the blade can be going at a maximum of over 230 miles per hour.
Wow.
So that
I had no idea.
I had a hard time imagining that too until, you know, and I saw these figures, I thought, wow, they really are big. They look big on the landscape, but they really are big.
Well, you know, and you see those and 230 miles an hour, wow.
Well, yes, when wind farms started being established, the most famous one that was established probably earlier was in California at Altamont Pass. And at that wind farm, they found that they were having a lot of mortalities, birds actually flying into the turbines. And following that, there was a lot of concern about the potential impacts of wind turbines to birds and the birds directly hitting the blades and dying. More recently, there have been concerns about bats
mm-hmm.
and the impact of the wind turbines on bats. For bats, they can die by hitting the blade, but they can also die by approaching the blade, and something happens to them called barotrauma, and it's kind of like they explode inside.
Ugh.
So they don't actually have to even hit the blade. They just have to get close enough, and there's
mm-hmm.
such a pressure change that it impacts them. We know now that these turbines can impact birds and bats, and so there's been a lot of people working on ways to help minimize these impacts.
That's good that there's some studies being done. Now, how about on the ground? What kind of impacts do the bottom parts, the parts that go in the ground, what kind of impact do those seem to have on wildlife species?
Well, you've asked a really interesting question because the mortalities, those are what people normally call direct impacts. But there are several potential indirect impacts as well. And indirect impacts are harder to study and a little bit harder to understand.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about a landscape where there were maybe no roads, there weren't wind turbines, That habitat is used potentially by small rodents, swift fox, or other animals, and they just can run across the environment there. Whereas if you take an environment like that and you put roads in, you have the potential to create a barrier to migration, so the little critters may not want to cross the road. Also, lots of times when roads get put in, there's the potential for invasive species, plant species to come in. And if invasive plant species start on the edge of the road, they can kind of work their way in, and especially if it's an area where there was maybe some native prairie. That could be a problem with invasive species working in and actually changing the habitat for those animals. There's also the potential for animals to be disturbed. An example of that is the sound could be disturbing.
Sure.
So maybe songbirds, and this is just an example, maybe songbirds out there, if the noise bothers them, they might have to change their song or sing louder. Also, the prairie chicken, which is a grouse found here in Nebraska, at least with the lesser prairie chicken, they've learned that they don't like tall vertical structures. So they may actually abandon an area where there's a wind turbine because it's a tall vertical structure and they don't like that.
Do scientists know why they don't like tall vertical structures? Could it be because predators or avian predators might be on tall vertical structures?
Most likely. And if you think about how in a lot of these areas, they were plains initially, right? So not very many trees out there, and just these animals have evolved without those tall vertical structures. And it is also, it's very interesting that Nebraska is situated within kind of a wind belt in the United States. If you look at a map of the United States and look at the average annual wind speed, Nebraska is dead center of the area where there's really high average annual wind speeds. And any wind speeds that are above 6.5 meters per second are considered suitable for development of wind energy. And at 80 meters, which is where most of these large-scale turbines go, Nebraska, basically almost anywhere in Nebraska, would have suitable wind energy for development.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's Nebraska's ranked third in the nation for potential wind energy development.
I wondered about that. I, you know, of course, being from Nebraska and Lancaster County my whole life, I know the wind blows.
Well, and the higher you go, that's the thing. The higher you go, the more wind resources you have.
Okay.
So that's where Nebraska, if you go to 80 meters or higher, then you're seeing more wind resources that could be enough to develop.
Okay.
Potentially.
So that's why these wind turbines are built so high, because that's where most of the potential energy is then.
Yes, you're exactly right. If you were to put a small wind turbine on your home, they actually have wind maps for that height as well. And those are at about 30 meters.
Mm-hmm.
And the wind resource at 30 meters isn't as good as the wind resource if you can reach up into the 80 or 100 meters.
Of course, with one house rather than a city, you might not need as many resources.
That's true. And you bring up an interesting point as well, because you said, you know, that strong steel pipe tube out there. The wind turbines that were developed earlier on had a lattice tower. So a lattice tower and maybe some guy wires that went off to the ground to secure it. And one of the things they found is that the lattice tower actually gave birds a perching location. So one of the ways that one of the things that's been used to help reduce bird collisions or birds around wind turbines is to use that monopole structure instead of a lattice tower structure.
How about cattle? Are cattle affected by wind turbines? I mean, are they able to graze that land?
As far as I know, no, they're not wildlife, but that is actually one of, maybe you could call it one of the perks to wind energy development in Nebraska, is that there are economic benefits to developing wind energy, and farmers or ranchers can lease their land to a developer, and lots of times they are still able, as far as I know, to ranch around that wind turbine. And whether or not the cows are affected by the noise, whether or not they like it or not, I don't know.
Well, we're in the very beginning, we're talking about the benefit for energy production, but yet maybe not hurting the landowner that has this on their land, that to me would be a mutual benefit, where a cattle farmer can continue raising cattle on a particular piece of land and still have the wind turbine, as long as, you know, it's not something that's harming wildlife. But, you know, that's a nice benefit for the landowner.
Yeah. In fact, a fact sheet that was put out by the Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy sector of the U.S. Department of Energy in 2008 said that developing 1,000 megawatts of new wind power in Nebraska could have cumulative economic benefits of $1.1 billion.
Wow.
And there's also they also state that the annual carbon dioxide reductions could be 4.1 million tons, and the annual water savings could be 1,840 million gallons. So in a state like Nebraska, where there's a lot of concern about water use, this is something else that is another environmental benefit. In another study, a report by the Center for Rural Affairs that came out in 2009, that one looked at increasing wind generation by 20% of the nation's electricity and how that would benefit Nebraska. And they estimated a creation of approximately 3,100 long-term jobs, approximately 25,000 temporary jobs, that it would increase property tax revenues by approximately $31 million annually, and payment to landowners for leases would be about $21 million annually. So those are some of the estimates out there, and those are many of the things that people look at when they think, wind energy development can be beneficial to the environment and also can be beneficial to rural Nebraskans.
Everybody has heard a lot about the Keystone XL pipeline and know the things that are going on with that. But, you know, it'd be nice to compare what kind of job creation, you know, short term and long term, and kind of do some kind of a study on the comparisons between the two, you know, the pros and the cons. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see. You know, I don't know myself, you know, how they would weigh out, but I think that'd be a real interesting thing to see what the differences would be. Or study.
Well, and actually there are a lot of people thinking about those sorts of things. So there's cost and benefits to everything. So what's the cost and benefit to coal, you know, and
right.
how does burning coal impact the environment and how does, you know, wind energy? And so in all of these different energy sources, and there are some people that, you know, are interested in that. And hopefully there are some studies going on to look at that, because we use energy.
Yes, we do.
And by creating energy domestically, we lessen our reliance upon foreign sources of energy, which can provide better security for us. Also, a lot of the energy sources that we can generate here, as far as more locally, they are more renewable. So that means that you can, you know, they're going to be there.
Yeah.
So wind is a resource that will be here. But one of the things that, you know, when we look at the map of Nebraska and we see that, wow, we have great wind everywhere, we also have some fairly great wildlife. And we have the Central Flyway.
Yes.
Goes right through the center of Nebraska. And in fact, the Rainwater Basin, which is, you know, just southwest, I guess, of Lincoln here, the Rainwater Basin is the narrowest part of the Central Flyway, and millions of shorebirds and geese and, of course, the sandhill cranes and the whooping cranes, they fly through that Central Flyway. And so there is a concern, of course, whether or not wind energy development could impact Nebraska's wildlife resources.
Are people working on a plan to say what parts of, well, say Nebraska, are conducive to producing wind energy? You know, what places are better than others in terms of wildlife species that might be impacted the most by the wind energy?
The Nebraska Game and Parks Commission, along with other resource professionals, came up with a wind energy and Nebraska's wildlife map. And this map shows the relative sensitivity of wildlife and their habitats to wind energy development. The map is based on about 13 different species of wildlife, including 3 species of bats. And what they did is they looked at the habitats and they looked at areas where they thought species would be really sensitive to development. And the map ranges in colors from light tans, which are less sensitive, to areas
like hot pink and red, which are areas that are more sensitive.
Danger.
Danger, you're right. So, and what this map is a really good, it's not so meant to be used to cite. So to say, I'm going to put a wind farm right here and I'm only going to base it on this map. But what this map is meant to do is to give somebody an overview and say, well, in this part of Nebraska, you're not most likely going to run into a species really sensitive to wind energy development. Mm-hmm. But if you choose, but you never know. You could choose a spot right next to a bald eagle nest, and or a golden eagle nest, and then that's not a good spot. So even though it may say that there's low sensitivity, it may not be the best spot when you get down on the ground.
Right.
So it gives kind of a general, gives you a place to start. It also is a great resource if you're interested in looking at, you know, the sensitive or wildlife that and how sensitive they may be to wind energy development. Uh-huh. And you can find this on the Game and Parks Commission, their website, and also on the website I've developed.
Okay, great.
You can access it there.
Okay, well, we'll get those web addresses out there later in the show.
Sounds great.
I was wondering if those were up somewhere where you could see them. So this is a big project, you know. Did you do any basing of the Nebraska map off of other states' maps that have been developed? I mean, I know it's specific to Nebraska, but is it? Did you get some ideas from other states, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask.
Well, this map was developed prior to me starting this position.
Okay.
And but they, well, I know that I've looked at other maps from other states, and other states do it different ways, where maybe they just show the distribution of, say, bats.
Okay.
Or the distribution of a bird, and it might be the entire map, but they don't look at the whether or not there's the habitat for that species there necessarily. So I guess every state is a little bit different.
Okay.
In how they look at these maps.
All right.
But Nebraska has also developed guidelines.
Oh, great.
And the guidelines are called, if you want the whole name, Guidelines for Wind Energy and Wildlife Resource Management in Nebraska. And these were developed by the Nebraska Wind and Wildlife Working Group. And that working group consists of state and federal agencies, non-governmental conservation organizations, and public utilities. And they basically got together to put this guidance document.
Oh, wow. And that was done in?
This was done last year.
Okay.
And we're working on updates right now, making sure just everything's current. And basically, in this document, they talk about the potential wildlife concerns mm-hmm, from wind energy
sure.
development, those direct and indirect impacts we talked about. But then they also have pre-construction site assessments. So before you start, you know, or before you decide where you're going to build a wind farm, well, first, it's really great to go in and talk to Nebraska Game and Parks Commission and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. That's like, should be top on your list of things to do. And then they're going to talk with you about doing some pre-construction site assessments. And by doing this, they have you look at several different types of surveys, including nesting raptor surveys, breeding bird surveys, prairie grouse surveys, mm-hmm. and then some bat surveys, of course, looking for threatened and endangered species, and then also doing plant community surveys.
Sure.
And there's a whooping crane desktop assessment. So to see, looking at the probability of whooping cranes coming
uh-huh.
through
sure.
your area. And then, so you would do those. Ideally, you do developer would do 2 years of pre-construction surveys,
mm-hmm.
and that would give the developer and, of course, Game and Parks and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service an idea of the species in the area
right.
and whether or not there would be concerns if a wind farm went into that area. It's much easier to avoid an area where there's
sure.
sensitive wildlife, and
sure.
you know there's that whole added avoid, minimize, mitigate. First, the best is to avoid an area, and
mm-hmm.
then you try to minimize those potential impacts. And so by minimizing, it could be things like, you know, you have that monopole instead of a lattice structure.
Right.
And looking at where you build as well,
mm-hmm.
Maybe staying, not being on ridgetops necessarily or next to rivers. And also one of the things that is very important here in Nebraska, and I guess probably any place. one of the things is looking at citing is where you decide to put a wind
okay.
turbine or a wind farm. But putting those in areas and habitats where the land has already been disturbed or
oh, sure.
fragmented. So what that means is instead of choosing an area where maybe you have, you know, rolling native prairie,
right.
You know, it's a beautiful prairie, which may have a good written resource there. But if there's an area adjacent to it or that has maybe agricultural land, that may be a better place because the landscape has already had some development mm-hmm. on it.
And I suppose even better if it's kind of marginal, you know.
Yeah, there is. And in fact, even using those existing roads. Mm-hmm. So that's why in an area where there's roads that are there, so you don't have to put new roads in.
Right.
I mean, that makes good economic sense mm-hmm. as well for a wind energy developer not to have to build a road. Roads are expensive. So if
yes.
you can use the roads that are there, and also some of the things minimizing the footprint. So what that means is, you know, instead of having a layout where you have, and I've seen aerial photos of this, where there's a road to a wind turbine mm-hmm. and then another road to another wind turbine. So
you could the main road.
Yes.
Oh,
so instead of connecting the roads, and maybe there was a good reason why they did that, but to look at just that sort of thing and looking at layout, there are some instances where the layout of the turbines can, whether the turbines are placed right next to each other or in a line or all these different things. Also, they've found that sometimes, depending on how you even just lay out the turbines, can help minimize potential impacts to birds.
Wow.
So, lot goes into it.
Yeah, it really has to go on a case-by-case basis. There's no general rule. You have to do all the steps in order to get the best product. And you have to do that with a lot of things.
You do. And that's why, you know, working with the Game and Parks Commission and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they can help walk through those steps.
Yeah.
And to learn that. And then also this, the guidelines here, the document, they talk about the practices for avoiding and minimizing impacts, which we've talked about several of them. Oh, and one we haven't talked about is operation recommendations. So if by any chance, say a wind turbine, it ends up that there's some mortalities of birds or bats mm-hmm. around the turbine, it may be suggested that the operation is changed so that maybe the turbines don't turn during the times when they're finding the greatest mortalities. And for example, out east where they have endangered bats, mm-hmm. some of the companies have done what they call it curtailing their operation. So they will shut down their turbines during the times when bats are most likely in the area. Mm-hmm. And that way, if the turbines aren't turning, then they're not going to kill bats.
Yeah, very good.
And there's actually been a lot of advances with that lately, too. So not only do they actually change the speed at which the blades will start to turn, mm-hmm. because bats, the mortalities they've seen are mostly at lower wind speeds. So they make it so the turbines, these are really smart machines, actually. They're computerized.
Oh, sure.
Some of them can be quite smart. But they'll make it so that they don't turn on until the wind is at a higher speed. And what they also do is they change the way the blades are so that instead of the blades catching wind, the blades are actually with like skinny side against the wind, so the wind's blowing past them. And that way they can keep the turbine from turning. And they've found that this is really effective at helping reduce bat mortalities.
Very good.
So that would be looking at potential operation, but, you know, it's one of those avoid, minimize, mitigate situations.
Yes.
And then in this document, they also talk about post-construction surveys. So a couple years, 2 years after the wind farm or the wind energy facility is established, to continue doing surveys to see if wildlife was, if they changed their behavior or if there's been any changes from the pre-construction surveys. I know that many of the facilities that are companies that are looking mm-hmm. to build wind energy facilities here in Nebraska, they're going through.
Okay.
Many of them are consulting with the Game and Parks Commission and with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Well, that is great information. And I have one more question to ask you, and then we'll get to the websites. So how many wind farms are there in Nebraska?
Well, currently there are 9 operating wind farms, and 2 are under construction. Right now there's a total of 196 turbines. And just to give you an idea, they produce 337.38 megawatts.
Okay.
And if that doesn't mean anything to you, that's enough to power about 104,000 homes.
Wow. In Nebraska, when you only have, you know, whatever it is, 1.8 million people, you know, that's a lot.
So we talked about Nebraska was ranked third for wind resources,
right.
But they're ranked 24th for installed wind power capacity, according to the America Wind Energy Association. And it's about 1% of the energy produced is from wind power. So energy energy we use in the state. And one of the things that is interesting to me is that there's been different growth. So between 1999 in 1999, there was approximately 25,000 megawatts of installed wind power in the United States. And by the end of 2011, there was just under 42,500 megawatts of installed wind power. So in about 12 years, there's 40,000 megawatts of wind power developed in the U.S. And like I said, the rate of this development has varied, whereas Nebraska had wind energy in 1999. I think there was maybe 3 megawatts installed capacity, and now we have over 300. But one of the things is that the development here has maybe been slower than in other states, but it's actually maybe given us a little bit of time to figure out where we have more concern for wildlife and to be able to look to take that into consideration.
Yeah.
Because again, it's best if you can start off in the beginning and put the wind energy facility or the wind farm in a place that is going to have the least impact on wildlife to minimize those impacts instead of, you know, if a wind farm is put in, it's much harder. You're not going to go in and remove.
Yeah, no kidding. I think most
likely you're not. So it's much better to be, you know, more proactive on this side than to go forward.
I think Nebraska's trying to get ahead of the game, maybe. That's great.
So.
Can you tell us, Carolyn, what the websites are for your website?
Okay, so I just I'm launching, actually, my website that I developed. And it is at http://snr.unl.edu/renewableenergy/wind.
Great.
And there should be a link as well up on the Nebraska Cooperative Fish and Wildlife Research Unit.
And, you know, we didn't get around to that, but, you know, that's that's another whole question that I didn't ask is you work for what we call the co-op unit. But what is the whole name and what exactly is the co-op unit?
Well, the whole name is the Nebraska Cooperative Fish and Wildlife Research Unit. And it is there is a National Cooperative Research Units Program, which is a collaborative relationship between the federal government, universities, states, and a nonprofit organization. And the mission of the Cooperative Fish and Wildlife Research Unit program is to train graduate students for professional careers in natural resource research and management to conduct research that will create new information useful for management of natural resources and to provide technical assistance to cooperators. And the Nebraska unit was added in 2004, and there are a total of 40 units.
Oh,
wow. In the system.
Okay. Well, great.
Yeah.
I'm getting back to the websites. I found the Nebraska Game and Parks.
Great.
And that would be outdoornebraska.ne.gov. Pretty easy. All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up for this session of Earth to Lincoln. I want to thank you, Carolyn, for coming out.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
You bet. You know, it's such a pleasure to have different aspects of the university and different aspects of what's going on around the state that maybe people don't know about. So I appreciate you coming.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, listeners. I appreciate you listening in for another Earth Lincoln show. You can hear us here every Tuesday, starting off at 6 with an episode of Bioneers and at 6:30 with a little special program. Thanks a lot. Have a great evening.